Blog Talk Radio.
Anybody ever been here? I just want to take a little time and speak my peace.
Every day's a rat race, moving at a fast pace, y'all. Never seen me get a break, never seen me get away, no. If it ain't working hard, it's being a dad or mom. I'll be the first to admit I'm neglecting the relationship. I'm not talking to you, just spending time with you. Like I should, forgive me, I'll get better.
Especially in Christian homes, are ending up in divorce. And the number one and two reason for that usually is either money or sex. But there are many other things that we need to listen to and take heart in. And why do I bring this up on my show, the show that's called Don't Give Up? And the reason why I bring it up is because many times, aside from just giving up on the relationship, giving up on the marriage, it may be so severe that some people are so distraught that they want to give up on life. And so I'm so very happy that we're going to have back with us tonight relationship coach and author Stéphane Labossière, helping men and women move in a positive direction together. Now, last time he was here last week, we talked to women about, you know, receiving their Boaz and how to prepare for that. And I hope many of you have already gone out and started to order your book or pick up your book. But tonight we're going to talk to men from his other book called How to Get a Woman to Have Sex with You If You're Her Husband. And I thought that was a profound title, but a very accurate one, because there's so many seasons and periods in a marriage and ebbs and flows, and we want to cover all these issues. So I encourage men, listen with your spouse sitting right next to you. Listen by yourself if you want to, or listen with the boys. But the idea here is that you listen. So, Stephen, welcome back. Glad to have you.
Thank you for having me again.
The pleasure is mine, really. I think very few people are approaching subjects in a very real and open way, especially when we have the title of a Christian or something that is seen as religious. We try to make it seem like a perfect package, and oftentimes people are struggling, and they're not able to communicate what they're really feeling and what they're really going through. So I really appreciate that realness. I wanted to say that, you know, when myself, even with my own experience in going to conferences and lectures and trainings and constantly trying to learn, I find that women have the materials and the resources, the support network, not that it's perfect and not that we can't continue to learn, but there's a lot out there for women to continue to learn how to be better wives to their husbands, but there's not that much out there for men. Now, did you write this book in order to help the men, or was it order to help the men help the women? Or what was the goal here?
It was to help everybody involved. It was something that would benefit both men and women. But I did feel it was important to speak to men first, because being a man of God myself and believing that a man should be able to be the head of the household, well, then it's not just about running things and having the final say, so it's about leading by example. It's about setting the standard of how you're going to pour love and pour positive energy into your relationship. You know, that's what it means to be the leader. So I felt like it was important that my first book be towards the men, not just towards the men, but towards married men, you know, because that's really where the focus needs to be. If we can get marriages on track or get more marriages on track, I think it would have a very profound impact on society. So that's one of the biggest reasons, and simply because I just felt this is what God wanted me to start with and to do. So that's why I ran with it.
Well, excellent. And you actually bring up, you know, so many things in your answer. When you start the chapter in chapter one, you start with a wonderful quote. There is no greater invitation to love than loving first. And that was by St. Augustine, but it also replicates what the scripture says, right? It's not that we love God, but that he loved us first. And so what is it that you are trying to say to men right away in that chapter by putting that statement right at the top?
Just understanding that you have to pour in what you're trying to get out. You have to make your focus more about being selfless rather than focusing on being selfish. You know, if you love your wife as you need to, then barring any other deeper issues and other things that may be going on, it's going to have a positive impact on your relationship. And it's just simply the way that we're supposed to live. Regardless of how someone else is acting, we have to learn to take that first step. We have to learn to put our best foot forward. And that's really for anybody, whether you're a man or a woman. But again, this book was aiming at the men, but the principle applies to all.
Right. We always want to point the finger and say, well, I'm doing, you know, my part and he's not doing his part or vice versa. But it really takes a lot of maturity to understand it's your job to do your part no matter what.
Exactly.
Exactly. So now women usually know what they want, I think, out of their relationship with their spouse. But at the same time, there's a hesitance to kind of just come out and spell it out and to say everything. We almost want to have it found, almost like a treasure that's worth not finding. Do you find that men feel that that is a worth it exercise, especially after they've already attained you as being their wife, you know, for them to kind of fight for continuing to find the treasure that's locked within her?
Well, I think a lot of men do have the mentality of, well, once we become husband and wife, I shouldn't have to do all the other stuff I used to do. It should be easier. You know, it should be automatic. I made the commitment to you. I also think that in a lot of situations, the man was spoiled leading into marriage, and he wasn't held to a certain standard of what he needed to do. And now, you know, the wife has gotten fed up and she's tired and it's like, hey, I need more from you if we're going to make good things happen. And to him, it's like, well, I never had to do that before. You know, what's the problem now? So it's a variety of things that play into the men not feeling like they need to put in that extra effort. And don't get me wrong, there are some men who fully recognize, you know, doing what they need to do before, after marriage, regardless, they, you know, they go hard. But yeah, a lot of men do get comfortable and lackadaisical. I mean, again, people in general seem to have that problem and make that huge mistake when it comes to getting married.
Well, two things. What are some of the things that women do to kind of spoil them or mislead them while in the dating or the courting process?
One, faking orgasms, to be quite honest with you. And the reason why I say that is because, and since we are speaking about sex tonight, a lot of men are led to believe they're doing wonderful things in the bedroom before marriage. And the whole time, this woman is not really getting the sexual pleasure you would think she's getting or that she's even proclaiming to get. But she doesn't want to be honest about it because she doesn't want to hurt his ego. She doesn't want to push him away. She's trying to make sure she has her man and she gets married. Well, then once they get married, she can't keep up the facade. And now she's no longer happy, and now he's wondering, well, what's going on? Because, again, to him, it was always good. Nothing changed about the way he goes about it. It's just all of a sudden she doesn't like it anymore because he was led to believe something that wasn't true. And to give you a perfect example, I once had a woman who wasn't even married yet. She was a young lady. She was with her boyfriend for 3 years, and she said she never had an orgasm with him. But you would ask him, he's giving it to her every night. That right there is a setup for disaster.
And I will say to my listeners, I know half of you are like, having sex before marriage. And I agree, sex is for marriage and within marriage. That's a big biblical context. And I also would add to what you're saying is I think part of the reason for that faking is this guilt, because you are kind of stepping out of a bound that you know you're not supposed to be in. And so you're kind of playing a mental game and keeping yourself, let me put it in the positive, when you are married and you're able to come into the full relationship of having sexual intimacy with your partner, there should be no guilt there and there should be no shame there and there should be no fakeness there. Right? So a lot of times when you're trying to trap someone, you know, ahead of time, and, you know, giving the milk away, the cookies away, whatever people call it, you're actually kind of harming yourself, because then after you say I do, you want to repaint the story, and you cannot do that. You cannot go back and repaint the story. It's very difficult. So how can men fight their inhibition to wanting to continue to seek out the treasure that's inside of their wives and continue to understand them? The scripture says that, you know, husbands, likewise, they should dwell with their wives according to understanding, giving honor to the wife as the weaker vessel, meaning like a crystal as opposed to a jar of clay. So how can they fight that natural tendency to not want to continue to pursue?
Well, I think it stems from two things. One, a lot of men do not understand and see the connection between pouring into your relationship and your woman and the sex that they're having. A lot of men have this belief that the woman is either a freak or she's not, you know, and they see no correlation between how they're treating her and how they're behaving in a relationship having to do with how she is receptive or not receptive to them. So that's one issue. I think also, and I lost my train of thought for some reason. I had something very good to say that I can't remember.
It's going to come back to you. The second half of that question, you got it?
Go ahead.
Okay, the second half of that question, I know it's going to come back to you, is what are the negatives that men can expect if they don't love their wives according to understanding?
Well, it's going to cause her to shut down. It's going to cause a lot of women to shut down. For her not to be as receptive to him, not just sexually, but just in general, you know, there's going to start to be some animosity linger, some attitudes coming. It's just going to create a very negative relationship, and it can create resentment as well. So I think that men have to understand that they're only setting the stage in a bad way when they don't pour into their wife. And now it did come back to me. The other issue with why men struggle with pouring into their wives after marriage is because too many people are not marrying the person for the right reasons.
Mm.
And too many people are trying to marry what they see on the surface rather than truly connecting with the individual they are with.
Mm-hmm.
Because if a true, genuine connection exists, and I believe that the man will want to pour into his wife because he feels for her in that way. But a lot of people are marrying for kids, or this person's resume is good enough, so let me marry them. They make a good wife, but that doesn't mean they're the right person for you. You know, there's not that true foundation of love and of friendship in a lot of marriages, unfortunately. So because of a lack of connection, yes, you have two people who came into this for what they can get, not what they were willing to give. And that is the biggest mistake of marriage. You have to marry someone that you are willing to do for, not who you think is going to only do for you. But
right.
That is the approach with a lot of people.
Right. You mentioned selfishness early on, and I think selfishness will replay itself throughout our conversation. In the book, you offer up 7 points, and we're not going to get through all of them tonight, but I wanted to start with the first one you mentioned, which is security. And I want you to explain how important security is to a woman, but also what a woman means by the word security, because I think sometimes we do get caught up in definitions, and a woman might say security, and a man might think she's saying finances, and it's not necessarily the same thing.
Say that one more time. I didn't hear the last part.
So I was saying that a woman might say the word security,
mm-hmm.
but a man might hear her saying finances. But it's
correct.
Not necessarily the same thing. What she's saying, what she's trying to communicate, is something very different. So what, in your experience, have you found that women mean when they say security?
Just feeling safe with the man, emotionally, physically, in all ways. You know, security is feeling there's stability there, not feeling like they have to worry about what you're doing, not feeling like they have to worry about you not being able to take care of the household. You know, so it's all aspects. There is a financial aspect to it that plays into it, but it's not just that. It's everything. You know, can she feel comfortable with you? Can she really feel like she can open herself up to you and you're not going to betray her and hurt her? Because one of the most precious things to a woman is her feelings. That's what she's going to protect the most. You know, so once you hurt her feelings, you set the stage for her to struggle with fully embracing you and fully handing you her heart. That's what it really boils down to. If I don't feel secure with you, why would I hand you my heart? And you have a lot of people who are married, and they're clutching their heart for dear life.
Mm.
And that's why they're not getting much out of the marriage.
That's a very, very sad picture. And as I mentioned at the top of the broadcast, you know, they're people who are so miserable together. And they, when I say together, they're sharing a home, but they're not sharing a life. They're not sharing their heart. And that's a very lonely place to be, and it can lead to a whole other set of offshoots of very negative behavior. So that piece of security is extremely important. But now if it's not there, the next tip that you bring out, communication, is what I believe would help a couple get there, get to that secure place. Now, we hear the word communication thrown out all over the place. And you even made a little joke in the book. You had a little side note about using a timer on long-winded women. He was joking, everyone. He was joking. But I actually, you know, I've heard of counselors recommending, you know, set the timer for 20 minutes or 40 minutes or what have you. And I think in those cases, you're dealing with people who are now so hostile towards each other that they can't speak to each other for more than 15 minutes before it becomes an argument. So the timer is really to kind of control and keep them from getting into a negative space. But when you talk about communication, what are some of the things that you suggest?
Well, let me say, sometimes the timer is simply due to the fact that a lot of men aren't the biggest talkers, you know. But women, a lot of women want to be able to talk to their partner, want to be able to share their day. So sometimes a man's struggle is not knowing when this is going to end, okay? And in that, he can get antsy. He can neglect the need to do it. So sometimes by telling a couple, hey, set aside 30 minutes out of the day where you guys are going to talk to each other, it allows for her to know she's going to get this time, this is what she wants, she gets to share it, you know, with her partner, and for him to understand, okay, yes, I can prepare myself to speak to her for 30 minutes, I can at least give her that, you know, it's not like I'm going in and I don't know if it's going to last for hours. No, I know we're going to go in, we're going to speak for 30 minutes, and that's a good thing. So it's kind of a good compromise, even when it's just a matter of two people who may not be on the same page when it comes to talking and sharing with each other all the time. Because a lot of men struggle with that, struggle with just communicating and expressing themselves. But outside of that, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Continue.
Oh, I was going to say, outside of that, the tips I would give is people have to understand communication isn't simply saying words to each other. Communication is listening properly. Communication is how you say those words to each other. See, the problem is you'll have couples who say, well, I did talk to them. Okay, I don't mean yelling at them and lashing out when you're mad. That's not talking to them. That doesn't count. You know, that's not expressing your feelings. That's just, again, retaliating. So when we speak of communication, we have to learn to be mindful of how we're delivering the message and how we're receiving the message. You know, making sure we properly listen, giving our full attention to each other, because that's another big problem. You might be talking to the person, and their mind is somewhere else. And then you wonder why your partner is mad and says you never talk to them. That's the thing. You got to pay attention, make time for them, you know, speak in a positive manner, be supportive, and again, and just work at it. Work on being honest with each other. Work on talking about everything, becoming comfortable about all things so that no one feels like they're walking on eggshells when they're trying to talk to you. And I think just being mindful of those things will help a couple improve their communication.
That's definitely key. And we pick up on each other's body language. We can read each other so easily. We know when someone's not really into it. And at first, I think there may be, you know, depending on where you come into this, you might actually not be into it. But you made a comment during your book, you know, you smile, have that pleasantry, and, you know, act like you want to be engaged with this. And sometimes people feel like, well, if I have to force a smile, why should I do that? What's the benefit in terms of putting that happy face on during this communication time?
Well, sometimes when you think positive or you force yourself into more positive actions, you can actually create a more positive perception or a positive attitude towards what you're doing. You know, it's not just about smiling to put on an act, and I didn't go deeper into it, but it's also just about smiling to go into it with the right mindset, you know, and understand that you're doing this for your partner and it is going to benefit both of you. So, you know, be happy with where you're at. Show some level of enjoyment. Yes, it's not that I want people to fake it, but sometimes initially you kind of have to fight through that and kind of have to, you know, fight the negative thoughts or the negative vibe that you may have from doing this and just try to look at it in a more positive manner. And in time, it gets easier, and then it becomes very genuine and very natural. And it's like, hey, you know what? This isn't so bad. I actually like this. You know, I enjoy being here with my wife and talking to her, especially when you see how it's impacting your relationship in a great way.
Right, and women are responders. We're built that way. And I believe that is why, you know, we are told to give that honor and respect to our husbands, where the husbands are asked to love the wives, because that's what we respond to, that genuine love, when men really are looking for that respect and that honor from their women to come towards them. You have two other chapters that you mentioned, which is reliability and financial security. How are those two things different?
Well, reliability is simply do what you say you're going to do. Being the man that she can count on, not someone who constantly lets her down, doesn't keep his word, you know, that kind of reliability. She knows that she can call you if she needs something and you're going to handle it. Financial security is financial security. It's simply about you being able to provide for your family. And the thing is, you know what, even if you are not the breadwinner, even if you lost your job tomorrow and maybe you're not providing all that financial security, well, you still have to. That's when you have to really be reliable. Be that guy who says, okay, well, you know what, let me take charge by taking care of the house more. You can still remove some burdens off of her and become that man that she can still count on, even though right now you may be struggling with the finances.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But she still wants to know that she has a man who able and willing to do what he has to do to bring in some money if it gets to that point where, you know, money needs to come in, you need to hustle, rather than the man who's going to sit down on the couch and watch TV and make excuses why he can't bring any money in.
Right. Right. So there's a balance there that has to be had between the two. And I'm concerned with the financial piece, because while it's important, we all know we have to have it to survive. What I find a lot of times is men might so much plunge themselves into the financial quest that they become emotionally absent at home. They spend all their time working, giving their energy and their time into the work, and then they come home and they have nothing else to offer. How can men balance that?
Well, the first thing is to understand that sometimes you're working past security. You're working now for luxury. You're working for all the extra things. And when luxury is going to cause you to lose in your relationship, then it's no longer a luxury, it's a liability.
Mm.
And you have to be mindful of that. So, yes, you have to work to pay the bills, but ask yourself, am I going over that? And am I not striking a good enough balance between pouring into my relationship and taking care of the bills? That's what a man has to do, you know. And sometimes it might mean cutting back on certain luxuries, certain extra things that we really don't need. You know, the reality is so many people try to live above their means, and then they lock themselves in this position of having to work these crazy hours and having to work these jobs they're not happy with. But if they were just willing to make certain sacrifices in their life with things that are not really necessities, then they can really remove some of the pressure, release some of that stress, and have more time for their relationship that can then produce better things in their life overall.
Let's flip it just a second, because, you know, our society is changing, and you mentioned in your book that there are men who are maybe what we call stay-at-home dads, and they're the one who's kind of managing the kids in the household, and the wife is bringing in the income. How do they keep their role? Because clearly they're being reliable and all of that, but how do they keep their role as husband and keep themselves in the right position and communication with their wife, especially if sometimes, you know, women can, we talked about independence last week, and we can get to this place where, well, I'm the one who's, you know, working hard or bringing the bread home and carry a disposition that we should not necessarily have. So how does the person, the man, the husband who's doing those right things still manage being that communicator and that, you know, head of his household?
Well, he simply just has to remain confident, remain certain in his position in the house, and do what he's supposed to do. You know, if she now starts to get out of pocket because she feels like she's bringing in more money, then address it immediately. Do not allow it to linger, because the more you allow it to linger, the worse it's probably going to get. you know.
Wow.
And it may just take sitting down, talking to her to really help her understand. I don't want to say you need to check her, but at the same time, that's kind of what is happening, not in a negative way, but
right,
you need to
right.
let her know, like, listen, this cannot continue like this. This is not going to happen. You know, yes, I may not be the breadwinner at the moment, but I'm still the head of the household, you know. And again, and understand that being head of the household is not about dictatorship. You know,
right.
you still have to show a value for her opinion and her thoughts on things and just, you know, make sure you're communicating with her about the decisions you're making. You know, when you do that, I think most women have no problem saying, okay, cool, you know, he's the head of household, I have no problem with that. When you're showing you can be that great man, you're reliable, and you show that you still value her in this relationship, most times they're going to roll with it. It's when you start doing a bunch of nonsense, you start making horrible decisions, and you start ignoring her and devaluing her, then yes, she will take the reins and say, no, forget this, especially if I'm the one making more money.
Right, right. Well, we're going to take a break right now. We're going to listen to a great song called One Day at a Time. And when we come back, we're going to shift gears and we're going to go right into the topic of sex and intimacy.
I stand amazed at what God has joined together. 'Cause with the good times, there were a few bad days. But we held on to the promise, the promises we made on the first day. I still choose you to have hope until we're old to stay. Challenges we faced seemed impossible, but we made it. Now through any season, you remain the reason I remember and still choose you. To have the whole until to say.
Together. If you are in a marriage relationship, that commitment is a covenant that you have made between you and God and you and the other person. And we are here having this wonderful discussion on Don't Give Up with
Stéphane Labossière as we discuss how men can actually have sex with their wives. And, you know, just to clarify, you know, you mentioned earlier on that when these things that we've mentioned so far aren't in play, women emotionally shut down. And the misconception is that, you know, women are being selfish and willful and determined that she's just going to withhold sex from him until he behaves right. And while that can be the case sometimes, it's really a deeper, more nuanced issue in terms of her having to shield and guard her heart from any more hurt, and she's not allowing that intimacy to flow out of her anymore. And so, therefore, there's no communication on that end of things. Talk about non-sexual intimacy and what men need to understand about that and why it's so crucial.
Well, you know, non-sexual intimacy is simply, you know, being intimate with your wife, whether it be talking, holding hands, cuddling, spending time together, all these things that aren't about sex and don't have to lead to sex. There are a lot of wives who feel like the minute their husband touches them, that means he wants sex, you know?
Right.
And that's a bad thing. That's not where you want your wife to be. And men have to understand it's important for a woman because it makes her feel more valued in your life. When you give her that non-sexual intimacy, it makes her feel like she's more than just a piece of meat that you want to poke at night. You know, that's just, you don't want to make it sound bad, but that's just the way it is. And, you know, embracing that principle can go a long way in making the relationship better and then making the sexual relations better in the marriage.
And now, you know, earlier on we mentioned the whole concept, or I mentioned the whole concept of saving sex for marriage, and I find that when people don't necessarily practice it that way, there's a type of selfishness that tends to exist because it's like, well, I was getting it before, and I was getting it at this frequency, and you didn't mind doing X, Y, Z. Why is it a problem now? And it becomes a type of a way where selfishness tends to increase in the relationship. I find that also that when men aren't happy sexually and they're getting counseled, the women are told, you know, listen, you can't be selfish, just fuck up, do your duty, it's your responsibility, those kinds of things that are, you know, not very appealing or glamorous at all. But on the flip side of that, that when women say that they're not sexually satisfied, it usually comes down to, well, you know, you need to be more spiritual minded, or you need to be more focused on who he is as a person, and not necessarily saying that, yes, just as men feel like they have these desires and they need them satisfied, that women also have sexual desires and need them satisfied as well.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk to that misconception and how we can get a balanced perspective of the equality there?
Well, again, I think it starts with, one, women being more honest about their sexual desires with their partner. The reality is there are a lot of women who have held back on being open about what they like or what they would like to try in fear of being judged by their husband, in fear that even if he did do it, it's going to be a waste of time anyway, so why even bother, you know? Or he's not going to be happy about doing it. I mean, whatever it is, the reaction and the result is something negative, and they hold back. And because they hold back so much, now it becomes even harder to say something about it later on. So I think that's one thing. Go ahead.
No, I was saying that sounds like it's probably why you started with the security and the communication and the reliability, because those things allow you to drop that fear, right? They allow you to...
Exactly. The more comfortable a woman is with a man, the more sexually open she can become. And that, again, a lot of men don't understand that, because we as men are pretty much on and off when it comes to sex. We want it, we want it. We don't, we don't. We're just on and off. There's not much else going on. It doesn't mean every man is like that, but for the most part, yes. for women, like I say in the book, men are that light switch you just flip on and off. Women are like the knob, the dimmer. You got to turn slowly to get the bright light. So because we're built this way, so a lot of men don't connect with the fact that it doesn't work like that with women. You know, it's a completely different ball game, and they don't realize that, yes, you have to make her feel comfortable. Yes, if you just had an argument or, you know, just did something to her that she felt hurt by, you don't be surprised that she's not going to want to have sex. You know, whereas men, you could make some of us mad, and we'll still turn around and have sex if it's made available to us.
So I think that difference
is what causes a disconnect a lot of times.
One of the things that I found, and please elaborate and tell me if I'm saying this correctly, women tend to look at, if you look at marriage as being a foundation, you know, building a house on a solid foundation, I think women look at sex as being one of the four corners, you know, one of the four pillars that you would build upon. You know, maybe you have sex and love and faith, you know, it's just one of the anchors. But I think for men, sex is actually that floor, that actual foundation. And then the four corners might be the other things, you know, finances, faith. Do I have that right?
I think that when men have not truly understood or experienced a deep and genuine connection with a woman, yes. Sex for a lot of them is the foundation. But for the man who's genuinely connected with the woman, I think love and support plays a much bigger role. And that man is willing to be a lot more flexible when it comes to sex, but he'll have the foundation and the tools necessary to create a better sex life anyway. So he'll be all right because that connection's in place. So I think it just depends on that. And again, unfortunately, a lot of people do not marry for the right reasons or what I believe should be the right reasons. And that's why you have this huge disconnect. It's just kind of a surface thing that's going on, and that doesn't sustain a marriage at all.
Yeah, and we have to realize that marriage, for the lack of a better word, is a ministry. It is a servitude, meaning you are servicing one another. You are actually wanting to give into the needs and the support and the rise of another person. And as you said earlier in the show, it should be reciprocal, so that each of you giving into each other, and when one is down, the other can pull the other up. And in theory, that's the way it should be practiced, and that's the way it should be looked at. And so when you say marry for the right reasons, it's beyond looks, it's beyond just chemistry. It's really being able to say we are sharing the same goals and passions and focus on life, and let's come alongside each other and do life together. Would you be able to add extra to that, or is that pretty much what we're saying?
Absolutely. But you know what? And some people may want to chop my head off for saying this, but I feel the need to say this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about looks, but as married folks, we have to stop dismissing the impact attraction has on a marriage. We cannot keep making excuses and say, well, if you love me, well, if you love them, you will want to look good for them. See, this idea that you should just do it for yourself. Once you're married, you're one. So you're supposed to do it for each other. And that's not just to women. That's to men also. That's to anyone who thinks it's okay to just completely let themselves go and think that that's not supposed to have any impact on their marriage.
Right.
And it sets the stage for a lot of issues. And it's something that doesn't get talked about enough, because if you're the man who says it, then you're this horrible, despicable person. And then if you're the woman who says it, well, then you're being shallow. Or you may just feel like, you know what, I don't want to hear nothing from him, so I'm not going to say anything about his beer belly. But you know you don't like it. You know it's turning you off. You know it's making you less likely to go into the bedroom with him. That's a problem.
You're right. We don't address it because we're afraid that we're going to sound shallow or vain or non-spiritual. But the reality is, you know, chemistry is a part of what draws us together. And the fact that, you know, if there is an argument or a problem, the fact that someone is appealing to you will go a long way in helping you to, know where you need to go. But if you're repulsed, and if you're repulsed emotionally and all kinds of things, it doesn't help
to also have to fight the battle with what your eyes are seeing. We know that men are visual, but I think women are visual too, especially when they don't have the other factors there, right? So if they're dealing with not having the communication and you're not showing yourself as being reliable or, you know, the person that they can open up to, then it's extra hard to ask them to be a wonder in the bedroom if there's no actual attraction. So I've heard it, you're right, I've heard it downplayed so many times where it says, well, you know, we don't get married for sex, and we don't. But sex is what comes with marriage. And so when you walk into it, you need to be prepared for that role, because that is not going to go anywhere.
Exactly.
We're up to the section of sexual prowess then, you know. Going beyond that non-intimate point into the actual act of sex itself, you talk about, you know, the myth of size with men, and I'm wondering, is that something that men really think is important to women? Is that really an important factor?
Size?
Yeah.
Yes, men think that it's important. You know, here's what's funny. I remember I did a show actually over a year ago, and it was with two women, and this came up, and they said, "Oh no, it's not us that think size matters. It's you men. The men are making more out of it than we do." And I'm like, "No, can't be." Now, I'll be honest with you. What I've seen is, and maybe this is just an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to get hyped up more in the Black community versus some of the other communities, because those two women happen to be from some other communities.
Okay.
And it's funny because I was even remember watching Best Man Holiday, and there's a line in there where Nia Long is speaking, and she's glorifying, you know, size.
Okay.
And I thought to myself, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Everywhere you look, everywhere you turn, size and stamina are the two most hyped things when it comes to sexual prowess. So a lot of men think that's what it takes. They think they have to be packing. They have to have some stamina. And now a lot of them think they have to just bang away. And somehow that's the magical recipe for great sex. Mm.
You know,
it's a huge misconception.
I wasn't even thinking of this as I was preparing the show, but this was a pet peeve of mine a few years ago when the whole Viagra thing started.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very irritated because you had this Viagra there for men's stamina. And because these other elements are not in place that we've already discussed, when those things aren't in place, women don't necessarily want you to have stamina. They're kind of like, can this be done already? You know, can we move on? So I'm like, why with all this Viagra? Where's the female Viagra? I don't even think they thought of that. But, I mean, if we're doing what we're supposed to be doing on an emotional level, I really don't think we have the need for all of that unless there's something that's physically wrong. And if there's something physically wrong, then by all means, speak to your doctor and address that. But we're not actually dealing on that level. But I just had to say that because, you know, when we talk about stamina, the women that you're talking about in your book, you know, how to have sex with your wife, they're the women that are going, okay, it's been 2 minutes already. Can we please move on? So how can, you know, men kind of shake that out of their head that the size thing is not. I think stamina probably is an issue because, you know, you want to be have good cardiovascular. You want to be strong enough to go your distance, so to speak. How seriously should they take that versus, you know, spending their time worrying about size?
Well, the thing is this: there's not, you know, size and stamina are factors, no doubt about it. They are factors that play into it, and, you know, the amount of size and the amount of stamina is going to vary on the woman, okay? But what men have to understand, and I think what women need to help in promoting this belief, is that it's deeper than that. If you want to sexually satisfy your wife, you have to get emotionally in tune with her. You have to get mentally in tune with her. If you can stimulate her mentally, you change the game right there.
Right.
That makes a huge difference. Also, understanding the intricacies of a woman's body. You know, an interesting fact is a study that shows 70% of women do not orgasm through vaginal intercourse alone. That's not something a lot of men understand. Okay? And if you said that stat to them, they would probably look at you like you're crazy. Funny thing is, there's a lot of women who would look at you like you're crazy because they don't even understand themselves. So I think there needs to be more education. You see, unfortunately, we live in a society where either people want to be off the chain with the sex and the sex talk, or super conservative. Rather than having a very educational, mature, informative discussion on sex and the human body. And if we really educated people more, I think they would grasp some of these things that we're talking about right now and be able to satisfy their partner a lot better. It would definitely help, you know. And then understanding the correlation for women when it comes to the emotional and the mental and even the spiritual into her being sexually receptive and her also enjoying the sex. Because the reality is, in many situations, her inability to enjoy it is because her mind is in the wrong place. A man could have every tool necessary. He could do everything right in the bedroom, but if that woman's mind is somewhere else, it will render it pointless.
You're right about that. You're absolutely right. And I wanted to kind of spend some time there, because a lot of times in our society, whenever anyone talks about sex, whether it's with the girls or the guys or in the movies or in a song, it's always pleasure-based. It's always this concept that it's always, you know, good, or either the only complaint I'm having is that I'm not having it. But what should a man's response be if their wife has discomfort in some way? So, you know, there is the guy who marries the virgin, or someone who might have been sexually abused in some way, or even after a woman has given birth, the doctors say 6 weeks, but sometimes it takes them longer than that to feel you know, close to what they felt before. So, again, how does a man move past the selfishness of their own desires to kind of attend to her in this area?
Well, I think that some of the reasons why the men struggle with those things is because if you're a guy who hasn't been getting much sex in your marriage, you become very antsy. And now you look at everything she says as merely another excuse. Like, I've seen men who had their wife, she's pregnant, and even though the doctor's saying it would not be best, she's telling him that's what the doctor said, he's taking it like, oh, you know what, here we go again. Because they already have this dysfunctional sexual relationship. If you have a man who's been getting it the way he wants, who know him and his wife have this connection, everything's good, he's going to be much more receptive to those moments where she needs him to work with her. She needs him to be patient. Also, her willingness to show that even though I need you to be patient, I'm still working towards doing something about this. You see, because there's some women who want to say, well, it's hurting me, or I have a headache, or whatever the case may be, and you just have to accept it and that's it. And they're not even searching for a remedy. So for him, it's like, okay, this is a never-ending thing. When will this ever change then? But when you two can sit down, talk about it, say, okay, well, this is it right now. It might be a couple weeks. And let's discuss other things we can do in the meantime to be happy. You know, and if that man – and that's the thing. That's where the man trusting the woman plays a big role. When he can trust that you're genuine with him, that you will be engaging in satisfying sexually and all these things, he can be okay. But there's a lot of marriages where that man does not trust that wife for nothing, okay? And he's thinking, oh, yeah, she's telling me 2 weeks, and when 2 weeks come, she's going to tell me another 3 weeks.
Right, right.
And because of that mentality, he's either going to try to push for it now, or he's just going to get frustrated, get mad, say some stupid things, and even do something that he shouldn't do.
So, yeah, there's a great need for maturity here in dealing with these issues. What can a man do to – gosh, this is a two-part question, and our time is going so quickly. But what can a man do for a woman who isn't experiencing pleasure, or maybe they never had a pleasurable association in their mind, right? And we talked about the importance of
a woman's mind. So they would actually have to work to create a scenario for them. What happens when, or have you ever dealt with a man who says, you know what, it's just too much work, why bother? And they decide to just kind of go elsewhere or just say, forget it, it's too hard to work on this.
I've come across that a lot. And the way that I diffuse that situation is both parties have to be on the same page on working towards this. So I've even at times put couples on kind of an agreement. So let's say they haven't been having sex for 2 months. She's not really happy with it. He's unhappy with the lack of it. They both need more things from each other, whether it be sex, whether it be him doing what he's supposed to do in other ways. So I'll say, okay, here's what we're going to do. For the next 4 weeks, you're going to agree that you're going to be giving her X, Y, Z, what she needs from you. In return, she's going to agree to having sex at least once or twice per week, whatever they agree upon in that time. All right? The goal here is to simply work through building this up. Because if you tell a man, okay, well, I just need this, this, that, and the other, and then we'll see if I'll do it with you, he's going to feel like this is pointless. This isn't going to go anywhere. How do I trust her? That's the biggest problem. A lot of husbands do not trust their wives sexually. I don't trust her. And the last thing that man wants to see is that he goes days with doing what he's supposed to do and still no sex.
Mm.
But when there's an agreement in place and she understands that, okay, I have to agree to this much sex, and the key that I tell her to help her through that, because, again, some people will say, okay, just suck it up, lay there, take one for the team. No, I tell the wife, you know when you're in a good mood, you know when you're in a bad mood. When you are in a good mood, take advantage, go initiate the sex. Go knock one out real quick. That way you're not doing it when you're in this bad place. You're not feeling like you're forced. You're simply going to do it when you're feeling good. He'll feel like you're more into it. You're both happy. You're both getting what you want. Now, because he's seeing that he's getting what he desires, and this is happening when he's doing what he's supposed to do, now we start the cycle of production, of progress, of people not understanding, okay, you know what? This is working. This is working. A man's not going to want to mess that up at that point. You know, a man who's genuinely or willing to work at things, if he sees that when he puts in the work and she agreed to this and she's doing what she's supposed to do, he's going to try to keep it going in most cases. Sometimes, yes, he could fall off to the wayside and try to take advantage. But a genuine man who wants to make things better is going to want to keep it going. Especially because it's producing results, because we're very 1 + 1 = 2. So
right.
Once we see that we're getting it and because we're doing this X, Y, Z, then, hey, we have no problem doing X, Y, Z.
All right. Well, that is perfectly said, and with that, our time is up. But women and men, I hope you got a lot from this. Women, please take it seriously. Take it to heart. I mean, it's easy to kind of try to discount things and say, well, why are men like that? But that's how men are. And why are women like that? Well, that's how we are. So now we have to figure out how to work together and how to make our marriages work so that our homes and our families can thrive and our kids can have a secure society to live in. And that is what God's design has been. Stephen, just tell us one more time. I'm sorry, Stefan. Tell us one more time, where can people find you?
You can find me on my website, stephanspeaks.com, StephanSpeaks.com. Twitter, Stefan Speaks, Facebook, Stefan Speaks Relationships, and you can get both of my books on my site.
Thank you so much for joining us. Next week we're going to move on to finances. That is another area that is hitting us very hard, and so I look forward to joining and sharing with you again next week. Until then, let's remember we are not perfect, but thankfully we serve a God who is.
You are the potter and I am the clay. You found me broken and still found a way to mold me back into what I'm supposed to be. Other people walked away, but you stay because you see I'm not perfect, but I'm perfect for you. You love me despite of all I have. have gone through. You gave your life so that one day I would see. I'm not perfect, but I'm perfect with you. You, you.